think I'll let you ask questions. Thanks very much.
George, could you speak real loud so folks can hear? George Tenet obviously sold out to the Bush administration. That's pretty true, isn't it? No question about that.
Yeah. I've written a chapter in a book that's published this month. It's called Patriotism, Democracy, and Common Sense. It's put out by the Milton Eisenhower Foundation. And the chapter I have is on the CIA. And I address in 5 pages the qualities needed in a director of Central Intelligence. And it was really, really convenient to have George Tenet in power at the time I was writing that, or late last year. Because he's sort of the antithetical. He's all the antithesis of what you really need. You need somebody who's made it on his own. You need somebody who's not come up through the congressional, the most highly politicized environment you can imagine. You need somebody who doesn't need a job. You know, you need all the kinds of things that George Tenet wasn't. And he was wanted to be a team player. And so he never... And against Rumsfeld, against Cheney, who was Tenet, you know? Well, if he was DCI, he should have been Tenet. He should have said, hey, man, I'm supposed to be a principal intelligence advisor. These guys are giving you a bunch of poppycock. I quit. You know, I quit loudly. Nobody does that anymore. Nobody has any guts. Please.
Yeah, it's unfortunate there aren't more people with integrity. It's very disheartening. It's important that there aren't more people with integrity in government, especially. And I know there are some people, I think Boxer is one. I've spoken to him. Couple of occasions.
Oh, from California?
Yeah, and I feel Edwards is promising to be that way also. Mm-hmm. But at any rate, has anyone approached you indirectly or directly and said, replied that you should be doing what you're doing from the government, from the administration?
No. That's the good news.
You think think it's because that they feel, at this point, they don't fear small potatoes or individuals because they have other means of at their disposal to counteract any influence you might have?
I think it's mostly because raising a stir about this would give us publicity that the mainstream press right now is very happy to prevent us from having. Okay. And also, most of us have, you know, we sort of graduated cum laude at least. And people know in the agency what we stood for and what kinds of people we are. And we all have these, you know, autographed pictures with George Bush the first, and you know, and so for them to say these guys, you know, these guys were a problem even while they were working here, they can't do that. You know. The best they can say is when you do say, well, Governor, he retired so many years ago, he can't possibly know what's going on. Well, I have 80% of what's going on, and I was there, and I kind of pieced together, not only me, but the colleagues that came out of the woodwork and joined this movement really killed. One chills about it. The operational people from the operations side of the CIA. There's one guy I call him the Renaissance Man of Operations. His father was president of the University of Beirut. He grew up speaking Hebrew, Arabic, he was chief of station in Saudi Arabia. He's an incredible guy. He's written books and stuff. He's one of us. And there are people from all over the intelligence community, not only from the CIA. I don't want to fill up the
paper. Yeah, I wanted to ask, you mentioned Tenet. What can we expect from the upcoming
what can we expect from the new head of the CIA, Porter Goss? He's got all the antithetical prerequisites in spades. He spent almost his whole career in Congress in a very partisan way, mind you. Okay. And he still refers to the CIA as his alma mater, okay? Now, that's an automatic disqualifier. Yeah. The alma mater, you shouldn't have a president, in my view, shouldn't have a president of the university that's from the alma mater. But worse still, he has no managerial experience. None. And this is a very complex management problem to manage. And last of all, and worst of all, he sat for 8 years on the House Intelligence Committee, okay? 7 years ago, he issued a report saying the analysis was very thin, there were no human agents to speak of, and nobody could speak the languages needed. And it was a very critical report. 7 years ago, guys. Now,
this man, head of the House Intelligence Committee, has more power over intelligence than anybody else in government, including the director. Why? Because he controls the purse strings, he monitors how money is being spent, and he has a staff of people to look at what's happening. So what the hell is he doing for 7 years? It's worse now. Now, you know, if that doesn't disqualify a guy, the reason the Democrats caved is, number one, many of them are wimps. Number two, it was not congenial in this pre-election period to look like you were dragging your feet on appointing a new director of Central Intelligence when there could be a terrorist event, right? Well, if there's reality to this threat of a new terrorist event, that's precisely the time where you don't change the people at the top. You don't make everybody so secure that they're more interested in protecting their rear ends and their own bureaucratic perch under the new regime and don't do their job. It's precisely so the people have drunk they're drunk with Kool-Aid, the politicians here. And I must say, John Kerry didn't help when he immediately endorsed the 9/11 Commission reports and set the political ball rolling. Once he did that, then the president had to be holier than the Pope or smarter than the other candidate. So they're going to... I don't know if there are enough sensible people in the Congress to prevent this log roll from going forward so there's legislation before the election. But if there aren't, the intelligence community is going to be worse off than it ever has been before because of the unnecessary and mischievous recommendations that are made there by people who really don't know what they're talking about. You've had your letter.
Yes. I was wondering, because you were working in the intelligence in the late 60s, you mentioned the threat from outside, but also from the inside, from the government. One thing I'm worried about is domestic terrorism cropping up against the government, because I know a lot of people, particularly people my age, we know that the kids that went to Columbine are ready to kill people. They have no, I think a lot of my generation don't have a sense of meaning, and they're going to see images of terrorism in other countries, and they're going to find it romantic. And I was wondering if you think that's if we might see violence that cropped up like in the late 60s with the campus burnings and the watch riots, if that might happen.
I guess it's anybody's guess. I really don't know. I know the FBI is overtaxed. They're following every lead. In other words, your neighbor doesn't like the fact that somebody with a head scarf moved in next door. He's going to call the FBI and say, you know, suspicious people. Guess what? The FBI will have to start a file on the basis of that. And, that's really beyond the pale. No, you start a file. They have to file one because your neighbor didn't like the fact.
Well, my name's Jamila El-Shafai. Right away. not only does the government, they don't want people from the Middle East coming to this country, but I'm not allowed to leave this country. A year and a half ago, I applied for a passport to go to Italy to study art. So I applied for my passport. I got about an eighth of an inch pile of paperwork, and part of that was that I have to find five people who have known me at least 5 years, have it notarized, that I am who I say I am. Now, obviously, I haven't done that because I'm afraid if I go out of the country, I won't even get back in. That's pretty scary.
Sorry. Thank you for sharing. I mean,
talk about civil war.
I have a comment and a question. You said you haven't, after 3.5 years, found the line that the Bush administration went wrong. But yet you were quite willing to talk about the dot.
The dot.
Mm-hmm. Well, if there is no line, and I agree with you there, I don't think there's a line. And they're already floating delaying elections. What's to prevent this administration from having no elections whatsoever and destroying the Constitution in the process? That's my comment. I think that's a real possibility I'm concerned about.
That makes me feel not so crazy.
The question I have is going back to your opening quote by Thomas Paine about Israel, and then partway through your presentation, you talked about we're in a constitutional crisis, and I agree with that certainly, and the constitutional crisis is all over the place. You don't hear much publicity about the
declaring part of the Patriot Act unconstitutional yesterday, for example. That's all quieted. And we don't hear very much about these other pieces of legislation which relate to Patriot too, but in the past. Why? What is your explanation and understanding of our congressmen, virtually none of them, speaking out about a constitutional process? Certainly the Democratic candidate has said we're not one that I've heard. Where are the voices? Has the fear overtaken us so much that there are no voices left that can be heard?
I was born in August of 1939. I've spent 5 years in Germany. I've had all manner of occasion to check with German people who were alive during those days. So I was there in the 60s and 70s. And I asked them how the most well-educated civilization there, people in Europe, could have remained silent watching what had happened. None of them had any answer, except that it all happened so gradually. And it didn't happen to us. It happened to Palestinians. It happened to people with scarves on their head. It happened to Jews. It happened to Gypsies. The churches seemed quite willing to go along with the regime.
Mm-hmm.
The Catholic Church and the Evangelical Church. And I would say that our mainstream churches are riding shotgun for the system, very few exceptions.
Right.
I'm a Catholic. Catholic bishops issued a strong statement before the war. We don't like this war, but the president knows best, and if there are weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah, you know. Well, when are they going to print a correction? Now, when are they going to make a retraction? Whoops. There weren't no weapons of mass destruction?
This war was not justified.
When did the bishops come up to that?
Well, you don't, see.
So what I'm saying is that I'm afraid that unless, I mean,
Annie Dillard, one of my favorite people, you know, she says, who will ascend to the mountain of God? Who will speak in God's holy place? There's only us. And that never has been any other. And if we don't, then I would simply quote Edmund Burke, British statesman from way back, who said that the hottest places in hell are reserved for those who remain neutral in times of crisis. So you can all just go to hell. Something about it. And we have to get one more question? Okay. Now, who's had their hand up longest? I think you have, yeah.
We have been hearing a lot of innuendos very quietly about Iran. They supposedly have been having not weapons of mass destruction, but some little uranium atomics and all this. Do you feel, as I feel, that President Bush is reelected will be in Iran within 6 months?
The people who are running our Middle East policy now were around government during the first George Bush. And they were widely referred to as crazies. When you came into the court on Monday morning, you said, you know what the crazies did over the weekend? You know exactly who they're referring to. Wolfowitz, Fite, Armstrong, or Colesdale. Okay. As long as they're in power, I don't rule out anything. And they are guided, and this is important, folks, I guess I didn't mention that. They have great trouble distinguishing between what they perceive to be the strategic interests of Israel. And this war, I like to say, this war was fought not for weapons of mass destruction, not for ties between Iraq and Al-Qaeda. There were two main reasons, three main reasons for this war. And I capture them in an acronym, O-I-L. O for oil, which the world is running out of.
Yeah.
You guys know that. Which we are importing more than half of what we need now for the first time in our history. Oil. I for Israel. Everyone acknowledges that Iraq is no threat to us at all. But you could make a reasonable argument that Iraq is obviously did have one of these Scud missiles, which Powell said before the UN, and he had two dozen. You know, they're all 24.
Really?
We know that for sure. And so they're just happy to have us. These guys, these neoconservatives, and I resent very much the use of the term conservative. I think silence always a conservative, and there's nothing conservative about their radical policies at all. But they, a lot of them work for the Israeli government. A lot of them wrote papers for Prime Minister Netanyahu. And you can just look up Project for a New American Century.
Right.
And it's all right there. It's a no-brainer. Why the New York Times and the Washington Post missed that before March of 2015? I don't know. So you have to be aware of that. And the L, people say, what's the L? You know, the L is for the logistical base, the 14 military bases that we're building there in Iraq now. Okay? And that will support this dominance over this region, which is oil-rich and security free for the Israelis. And so what I'm saying to you all is that if this policy perdures through the election for 4 more years, there's going to have to be more troops sent over there. I mean, for only so long can we put up with 3 Marines killed every day. And it's not going to help anything. And so just as in 40 years ago, 1964, under Lyndon Johnson, 1968, during Lyndon Johnson. And those of you who heard Daniel Ellsberg's speech in the New York Times a day or two ago of this, just as in those cases, there are secret plans, I'm sure, about building up our forces there. In 1968, General Westmoreland, after saying we're winning the war, had a secret request for 208,000 fight the war, will they allow us to put Vietnam up to the Chinese border? Okay. You know what prevented that? 2 leaks from the New York Times. One could leak that figure, another that leaked the figure that the Central Intelligence Agency was holding 500,000 folks as people under arms in South Vietnam, contrary to Westmoreland's assessment, there were only 200,000. And Dan Ellsberg, that was a leak that worked. Dan Ellsberg was responsible for one of those leaks. So what am I saying? I'm saying that nobody's talking about reinforcements now, but to win this thing, whatever the hell win means, to prevail, you know, the same as in Vietnam. I'm not sure I went through that thing, but we were told right after World War II, they say 500,000 troops to pacify Vietnam. The French said, you know, we'll try anyway, and they failed. So 18 years later, the U.S. is there with 535,000. Still didn't prevail. 2 years ago, General Shinseki, the head of the Army Chief of Staff, how many troops do you need to do this Iraq thing? What did he say?
100,000.
Several hundred thousand. We know now that he was asking for 400,000. So, if the election goes one way, I think he can look for that. And where are they going to come from? You know? Nobody's signing up for the National Guard or the Reserve. Guess why? You know? People aren't showing up by the individual Ray Reserve. 1 out of 3 doesn't show up. And so, you know, it's not being conspiracy type to say there might well be a draft.
It's called a draft. It's like a and making special dispensation to ask one final question.
Oh, okay.
Then we'll let you go,
yeah.
I promise. Some of us have been working hard for a year and a half to change regime. And
here. Or in Iraq.
In Iraq. I mean, you know, in the United States. Washington, D.C. I'm feeling a little hopeless here. And we were feeling a little hopeless a year and a half ago, which is why we said we had to do something. Should we bother? Is there a point in getting Bush out of office? Is it going to help?
Oh, yeah. Well, the big difference. I'm not going to suggest who you should vote for, but the big difference in my view is if you look at what the two candidates are saying, and both of them are being advised to appeal to the same sort of middle, possibly, I mean, but, and so you can't really distinguish from the rhetoric what difference there would be, but I talked about the crazies, didn't I? Mm-hmm. I talked about the neoconservatives. Those are the guys, and there are no women, they're all guys, which is another thing. They've got us into where we are now. They won't be around if the president's not around. That may sound like a small thing.
It's a very big thing.
So
I think we're all aware that the president, in and of himself, which is an idiot, isn't running the government.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's not capable.
People ask me, you know, does the president know about all these lies? And I say, well, what's worse?
Yeah.
So you know,
that's
well, thank you very much.